Hello, everybody. Welcome to Eagle Eye View. I'm Jacob Noderman, back for a second season of our Georgia Southern University podcast. We're going to try to make things a little bit more timely, try to pick up on the latest news stories, what's going on at the conversation table, and try to bring in experts to put it into reference and what Georgia Southern is doing in their own work to possibly play a role in any solutions. For anyone who might be a sports fan, or at this point, I'd say the entire country is following up on this story. A few days ago, there was a football player who plays for the Buffalo Bills. His name is DeMar Hamlin. A few days ago, during Monday Night Football, he made what looked like a rather routine play, made a tackle, a few seconds later, stood up, but then a few seconds after that, went right back down. Reports say that he was resuscitated twice on the field, taken off the field in an ambulance. But every time we hear about DeMar Hamlin at this point, it has only been positive news. For the first two or three days, it had been a lot of waiting to hear what's happening, looking for any kind of updates, and there was a lot of prayers, but kind of bracing for the worst. The latest is that he's awake, he is off his breathing tube, and he actually had a conversation with his players, and a lot of the credit for his quick and prompt recovery goes directly to the medical staff who were on the field, responded immediately to his needs, and took care of him. And it came down to where every minute almost matters in a situation like this. And I have someone with me who can talk all about that. His name is Dr. Steve Patterson. He's a clinical assistant professor of athletic training and graduate athletic training director for Georgia Southern University, Dr. Steve Patterson. Steve, thank you for joining us today.
Jacob, thanks for having me.
So when we're talking about the DeMar Hamlin play from Monday night, did you see the play? And for a person in your position, what was going through your mind when you saw that?
I did see it numerous times in regards to it as they were caring for DeMar on the field. You know, my first inclination when I first saw it was something that I think is what actually happened. The commotio cordis is the diagnosis that we really in sports medicine think is what happened in regards to this case, which is a very rare situation that happens to the cardiac episode. And so as the heart is beating and is it getting ready to restart, there's a millisecond there that if there is collision or contact to the chest wall or the chest cavity, that it could send the heart into a defibrillated state. So basically there's no set pulse rate or heartbeat. It basically goes into bouncing fibrillation.
Oh, and my.
And so that's pretty much what the experts and what, when I first saw it, what I felt was going on with him, because of the fact that he was able to stand up, he was able to kind of right himself, and then all of a sudden the collapse happens. And so even though it didn't really see from the hit that the wide receiver gave to him in regards to the chest, sometimes it's just the opening of that could cause that issue. And the reason why I really kind of thought that this was what it was is that we actually had this situation happen at one of our local high schools in Bullock County about 5 years ago.
Oh, really?
In that case, there was not a collision with a player, but it was actually a receiver went up for a ball, had his hands above his head, and was trying to catch the ball, and the ball hit him in the chest. And that was a football, and this happened on the field. Luckily, in that case, too, there was certified athletic trainers on both sidelines of that game who were able to resuscitate and to be able to defibrillate quickly. And that's really kind of the key thing that we kind of saw with this, is that the staffs from the Bengals and from the Bills were spot on in regards to getting the care that he needed at that moment. It's not even moments that matter in this situation. It's seconds. And
wow.
That's really kind of what made the positive situation in this realm.
So for a particular diagnosis like this, you said it normally happens after there is contact to the chest. For the example of your high school player, it was a football hit in the chest. For how it was for DeMar, it was a rather routine tackle, but his helmet did go into the player's chest. Does this cause any kind of permanent damage to the heart, or is it just purely just a reaction to the heart feeling pressure?
And that's not, I mean, it can have more of a significant realm of a bruising to the heart muscle and tissue. And depending, too, if there's any underlying cardiac issues that may be going on that maybe he may not know about.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, there will be a huge cardiac workup going on for a lengthy period of time in regards to just checking this out. But it doesn't mean that once you have this, doesn't mean that you're more susceptible to it. It is, like I said, a millisecond that happens in regards to when the heart goes into the T wave of the like electrical cardiograph sign. And so it's right at that point, and it's a millisecond where it happens. These cases were pretty, they're not common. They're very rare.
Because this was, the reason it stands out is because not only of the severity of the case, but also nobody knew what was going on. It had been so rare, at least right up to this point.
Right, and it's not your typical football injury either.
Yeah.
This is stuff that you happen to see more along the lines of car accidents, where the steering wheel will come and hit the chest. It happens a lot with youth baseball. Years ago, you started seeing chest protectors on kids that were pitching. So EvaShield and some of the other sports medicine or sports equipment films came up with little padding that went over the chest. That is because for this issue. Because what we were seeing with kids, especially young kids at playing baseball, is that the baseball would hit them in the chest. Their bones hadn't been developed yet in regards to their rib cage, and then they were seeing some of these issues there. So the cases that we had seen was previously more so like that.
Okay. You, as we mentioned, the player reportedly had CPR done on him for a few minutes and was lost his heartbeat twice on that, just on the field before they even got him to the hospital. And you said that every second matters. When a lot of us hear that phrase, it unfortunately carries a little bit of a cliche, because obviously he's in pain, he needs medical attention, every second does matter. But in a situation like this, what is at stake after a certain amount of time passes and the proper procedure isn't taken in time?
In reality, if there wasn't defibrillation that was in a timely manner, I don't think that the prognosis would have been great. So if this would this happened on an NFL field, which is covered by over 30 sports medicine individuals, whether that be the athletic trainers on both staff, the physicians, the EMTs, the paramedics that are on the field, the independent neurological consultants, which we've heard a lot about this season too.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't in that situation, if it was at a junior high school or a middle school or even many high schools where there's not either an AED and there's definitely not an athletic trainer that's on there, then the issue could have been dire. And unfortunately, there has been 6 cases of this issue this year. This one is getting the press.
Sure.
Of course it is.
Did you see all those cameras around?
Right, of course. Of course it was. But in some of those situations where if it happened in a rural field in the middle of Oklahoma, for instance, that would be a unfortunately, it would be probably a negative situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is the seconds count. It's the seconds count in regards to getting that heart back into normal rhythm. And CPR alone doesn't do that. It has to be defibrillation. You can pump all you want as far as with the CPR, but if you don't get that rhythm back, your heart is just going into basically kind of like a shallow breath.
Okay, I gotcha. I'm glad you brought up how many personnel are brought up on a football field compared to how there are in a rural high school in Oklahoma. What does the landscape of needs for athletic trainers look like these days? Because obviously you can't have 30 people in a high school. That's just not feasible. But
Right. Where
are we at nationally as far as having enough to cover high school sports?
We're still low, and things are getting better. The Corey Stringer Institute, which is named after Corey Stringer, who passed away over 20 years ago.
That's right. Was a player for my hometown Vikings.
Yep. And so that institute has done some amazing work in regards to developing, it's called the Sport Atlas. And so what they have done is they've listed every high school across the country, and if there's an availability and or having a full-time athletic trainer at each of those sites. I think we're doing a better job. Some states are better than others, and so we'll just brag on Georgia a little bit. Georgia is one of the top ones in regards to having athletic trainers available. Does that mean that there's an athletic trainer at every practice? No. Does that mean that there's an athletic trainer at every high school? No. But they're doing a better job. But this kind of goes back to the kids in regards to parents, too, is looking at it. I would never, I have twin boys that are 12. I would never allow them to do any type of athletic event if I knew that there wasn't someone there to take care of them.
We talked about the fact that, for at least for the NFL, this hadn't been seen in 50 years. But you're bringing up that it's not so common that you will regularly see it, but common enough to where you're not surprised it necessarily happens, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So with that in mind, then, what kinds of practices are, I guess the question is, as the director for the graduate athletic training program at our lovely university, how do situations like this play a role in the curriculum for the students at Georgia Southern?
So this is a huge part of it because, you know, somebody wrote this statement this week, and I love this, and I'm going to butcher it, I know,
but... We're all about paraphrasing at Eagle Eye
View. Yeah, right. So one of the things that we rely on in a situation, an emergency situation, is our training. We may not remember every step, every second, but if we can go back and we can remember just our training in a situation like this, then that's huge. And so what we try to do with our students, and I see this with our clinical sites, whether that be here with our university in Statesboro, or with our high schools that we work with, or professional teams, is that there's constant recall practice that goes on. And so when there's a situation like this that comes up, our students are able to remember their training to be able to go into that where they don't have to think about it, they just go. And it's kind of like going back to the, you know, the Top Gun Maverick thing. It's just like, don't think, just do.
Yeah.
and that's what we go into. And then we can kind of work on things afterwards. So for our students, for football at the university, they practice this daily. When we are training our students in our program, the first class they take is emergency care. And so while we're kind of in University Center over with the physical therapy students, they'll see us, and our students will be laid out in the carpet. And we'll go through situations like this and go step to step and go slowly. And then we'll build up quick nature. So that way it's no-brainer. They go into the situation and it happens. And we've had many a student over these last 11 years that I've been here where they've been in a situation, an emergency situation, and they've been able to handle themselves greatly. Then comes after the fact. And that's a different kind of story. But, you know, once you get through the system of giving care to the patient, getting them off and getting them off the sideline, then comes a little bit of the hard part. I think the hardest part comes after the fact. When I close that rig and I send them away, that's when everything comes back to me.
Oh.
And so you're going through every second, every millisecond of what you just did. Did I do right? Do I do this right? Do I do this right? And so that's, too, when we have to come alongside the students and our preceptors that are working with these individuals and these patients to kind of really check on them to make sure that they're okay. So I know for a fact what's going on right now in both Buffalo and in Cincinnati. There has been boots on the ground since Monday night at both places, talking with both staffs, debriefing, going over what went right, what went wrong. And, you know, every situation, there's going to be those things. And there's going to be, there's support that's going into each of those individuals' camps. I'll just say teams.
Sure.
Camps. And so those staffs have been really working a lot over the last couple of days of just kind of going through, you know, going through the emotional toll of what they did and what they took place and really kind of helping them along that process. And that's something that I don't think we have talked about for, you know, years. But it's really kind of becoming one of the most important things now is this debriefing part after and really helping them go through. Because, and I'm not comparing this in any means to the fine folks in the military of what they go through with post-traumatic stress.
Right.
But this is a post-traumatic stress that a lot of these individuals take and carry with them after the fact. Like either if it went right or even if it went wrong in regards to bringing someone back from a situation like this. And so there's a lot of that that's going on that right now. And that sometimes I think is the hardest part.
I both can understand it and I don't want to act like I do understand that. Because in situations like that, you have at the very least an entire stadium of people watching a few individuals working on the fly. And we put a lot of trust into them, but there's also a lot of responsibility and pressure that's being carried on their shoulders in those moments. For someone in your situation who's been around the block a few times and you've been in these debriefing meetings, can you tell us what happens in those debriefs, how we get individuals back on their feet after this?
That's hard because all of us are going to deal with it differently.
Sure, every situation is different.
Right, and so when you're in a situation with the staff, and I've been in the situations with these, is that there's going to be some that are going to be really talkative, and they're going to talk every second about it, and then there's going to be some that's going to be a little bit more subdued. When I've been in that situation, I've been a little bit more subdued and just kind of quiet and going through that and really trying to process everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's really understanding what each individual person needs in regards to what they need to kind of work through that process. But really, it's about going through the process of you did everything right. This is what happened. It was a positive situation for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and in regards to going through.
If you're one of the athletic trainers and you're in that huddle, do you know something is different when you're watching the play happen, or do you notice something is different until you get to the player and you see what's actually, maybe do some quick diagnosing?
That's a great question, and so... Definitely, I think in my career, I've been able to, I look for signs.
Sure.
So, and I hate to say this, but I'm not really a fan of watching sports because I feel like I'm working.
I completely understand that.
Yeah. And so a lot of times when I watch a game and whether that be, you know, one of the things that I get to do is I do the visiting liaison for our athletic training program over at Georgia Southern with football. And so when I'm watching a play on the sideline, I'm looking at, are they getting up properly? Is there things that they, you know, that you can recognize in the mechanism of the tackle where you know it's kind of serious or not? And so when this situation happens with him standing up, you know, you think, oh, great, that's awesome. He's able to get up.
Yeah.
But then when the way that he collapsed, you knew something. There's something, whether mm-hmm. that be neurological, whether that be cardiac, whether that be something. And so kind of like as you're running out on the field, you're starting to go through your checklist of it. And that's kind of like how I roll and work in regards to that is – as you're getting closer to him or her, whoever the patient may be, you're really kind of going through the process of what kind of things you need to check on for this, of how, like how they landed or how he collapsed. And so you kind of have a fear of what that could be in this situation because of just how it came out. And then you're just going through your checklist of what it is. And so once you get there, you're ready to go. So, and like I said, that's the immediacy of how the care was given. I would say probably within 45 seconds of the hit, there was probably an AED on site.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't see that because of just the camera angles and everything, but I'm sure of it because each of these staffs, they work through the process of you have this, you have this, you have this. And so whether that be their, assistants that are working with the players or their seasonal interns or whoever, they had AED duty. And so that AED was out there within seconds of the staff being out there. And a lot of times they'll just bring it out just in case. But I'm sure that it was out there within just a few short seconds.
So what I'm gathering is here is when it comes to sports medicine, not only is there the knowledge you need to have in actual medicine, you need to also have quick decision making. You need to have the confidence to go with that decision making. You need to have the emotional strength to cope with the fact that you just made those decisions in real time. And there's also the weight of having gold-plated communication skills as well.
Yeah, all the above. And really, all that comes down to is practice.
And you said that all has to take place, all those different categories, it's 45 seconds or less. And once you get past that point, the health of a player starts to be dire almost.
True, yeah.
So how do you... I mean, I'm not trying to scare people, but I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to be able to understand the science of it all, but I can certainly try to understand the emotion of it all. How do you and how do your colleagues prepare Georgia Southern students for those situations in an emotional sense? Is it just practice makes perfect, get those reps in, and hopefully the science will follow along the way?
Well, that's the easy part, is just to go through the practice of it. But I think what really makes it more vital and more of really holistic is to be able to discuss that process through it.
Okay.
And so when we are doing practicing and when we're doing our education of our students in regards to these skills, is it's not just a check off of a skill. Yes, you have to make sure that you do these. You make sure that you have to check all these airway, breathing, circulation, the things that we learn in regards to, you know, your basic first aid stuff.
Yeah.
But also really trying to like get into the more of the minutiae and the quick skills of it, but really talking way through it. Okay, what about if this situation happens?
Mm-hmm. And so, because it's all hypothetical.
It's all hypothetical, and that makes it fun. I mean, that's the fun part about it, and I love that. And as coming up with these scenarios and making them as wild as possible. And so, really, kind of talking through those scenarios will kind of help them in the process of when it happens in real life. And you know, as we're going through that, that really helps emotionally too, of what they're going to go through during that process. And, you know, the other thing that happens too, and I see this a lot with the TV angles, you know, you saw his teammates the other night.
Yes.
You saw the Bengals teammates the other night. Like, that's the other part that is really difficult. And so these staffs, these medical staffs that are for each of those buildings and those teams, they're the ones that are going to be dealing with them.
Yes.
You know, and so how many of them on Tuesday morning came to them and was like, what, this could happen to me?
Mm.
You know, and so that's another part of our profession that is not seen and not really talked about much. But, you know, that's a fear. You know, these kids are, you know, the cream of the crop as far as like your professional level. You know, they're making lots of money in regards to this as a football player. But, you know, there's a fear there that this could all go away. And so really dealing with that, too, part of it is it. So there's a huge part of the communication, like you said, the emotional response to it, the basically the psychological issues that you go through in a situation like this.
Sports medicine has certainly come a long way in the past, just the past few years, hasn't it?
Absolutely. This is my 24th year in the field of athletic training, and it's been amazing to see just in regards to where the profession has come in just that short amount of time. I'm not saying that I'm old, but I'm old. But it just trying to see of how things have changed in regards to the profession, how things have changed as far as our educational programming, what we have to do in regards to that. And so it's definitely becoming very holistic. And I've made that word a couple times, but it's definitely true.
I'm talking with Clinical Assistant Professor of Athletic Training and Director of Graduate Athletic Training Program at Georgia Southern University, Dr. Steve Patterson. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Jacob, thanks. It's been so great to talk with you.
And thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in the next 2 weeks for another exciting edition of Eagle Eye View. You can listen to all of our previous episodes on our website at georgiasouthern.edu, or you can find us on Spotify and all your other major podcast platforms. For Eagle Eye View, I'm Jacob Noderman. Catch you next time.